All right. So we were discussing, we'd begun discussing Kedusha, and we made our way through the kind of introductory paragraph of Kedusha, Nekadesh Shemcha, where we say that we are going to sanctify Hashem's name, like the angels do, and we discussed all of these ideas. So, and last week we discussed the ideas about when we start Kedusha, when we say Kadosh, 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 that we raise ourselves up on our tiptoes, called the Na'anuim, and exactly what that represents, a couple ideas about that. So tonight, I wanted to discuss just the first line of Kedusha, Kadosh, 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 and probably just discuss Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. Probably the rest of the line, Hashem Tzimolok L'Arts Kevodo, probably be for the following week.
Is this a series?
Yeah.
I've been missing it. Oh, but does it matter?
No, we'll be good. Yeah. Okay. So the there are a whole bunch of ideas in exactly what, when we say Kadosh, 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 we say it three times, holy, holy, holy. Exactly what is the repetition, what do the three times represent? And there are a number of ideas, a number of the Rishonim talk about it, and the Acharonim, and there's a lot of overlap. I primarily want to focus on and try and kind of expand upon what the comments of the Vilna Gaon, which we'll get to in a moment, but I just wanted to kind of summarize a couple of the basic approaches taken by the other commentaries. So one of the general ideas, the Avudraham, says an idea like this in the Radak, that the Avudraham says that when you say something, you describe something a certain way, you say it once in order to say what it is. You say something, so we say Kadosh in order to say, to express what we're describing. If you say something twice, if you repeat something, you're trying to emphasize it. So you say something twice, you would repeat it for emphasis. However, you say something a third time, so it's kind of like an unnecessary repetition. There's no reason to say it. You said it, you got your point across, you emphasized it. There's no reason to say it the third time. Says the Avudraham that when you say it the third time, that's as if you're basically saying, I can't say it enough times. That the third time you're saying it is kind of like an unnecessary addition to express the point that I can't say this enough times, and therefore I'm saying it, more times than necessary to show that there's really no limit to the amount of times that this should be said. And says the Avudraham that the idea being that Hashem's Kedusha is, the way he says, is Ein L'Kedusha So Cheker, that there's no getting to the end of Hashem's Kedusha. There's no understanding or investigating Hashem's Kedusha and really, covering the whole thing. And there's no way to appreciate or even to express the totality of Hashem's Kedusha. And therefore we say, Kadosh, 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 you say it three times in order to kind of express that we can't possibly, we're incapable of saying it, as much as we should, incapable of expressing it or understanding it in its totality. A number of Mefarshim who say things that are variations along those same lines, that about how Hashem's Kedusha goes throughout everything, that it covers all of the worlds. The Targum Yonasan on the Pasuk in Yeshaya that the Kedusha is based off of says I actually wrote it down, Kadosh B'Shmesh Meroma Yilah, Kadosh Al-Ara, Kadosh La'om Al-Me'al Maya, which means that Hashem is Kadosh in heaven, and he's Kadosh on earth, and he's Kadosh forever. And basically this same kind of general idea that Hashem's Kedusha encompasses everything and is total and complete and absolute and beyond what we can really appreciate. I'm going to leave aside some of the particulars of what the other Mefarshim say. I wanted to actually just focus mostly on the idea that the Vilna Gaon says, which is a little bit of a different idea. Along the same lines, but I wanted to just kind of go in depth about this. The Vilna Gaon says that this trio of kadosh, kadosh, kadosh is similar to the meaning of the phrase melech malchei hamalachim, at least in the structure, that the words melech malchei hamalachim mean that he is the king of the king of kings. And the Vilna Gaon says, explains like this, that even in you know, olam hazeh, even in this world, even in very, you know, mundane kind of way, when we talk about, you know, between two different people, you can have levels, you can have degradations, you can have someone who is a higher level than someone else, you can have someone who is quote-unquote better and someone who's the quote-unquote best, right? You can have someone who's, that you can have, you know, people who are on different levels, and you can have one person who's, you know, he's on a level above everyone else. And says the Vilna Gaon that when we say that Hashem is melech malchei hamalachim, that he's the king over the king of kings, so, you know, if you take the king of kings, that means the person who's, you know, the highest, the best at royalty, at kingship, and Hashem is king even over that. So what does that mean? That Hashem's malchus, Hashem's kingship, is not just the best among others, not just the greatest. It's in a league of its own. It's something which is fundamentally and essentially different than everything else. So too, says the Gra, that kadosh, kadosh, kadosh is, the words of the Vilna Gaon are, kadosh yoser mi mishahu kadosh al kadoshim, that he's more holy, he's more kadosh than the person who is the most kadosh among all of the kadoshim. You take all of the everything that's holy, and you find the thing that's the most holy, and Hashem's kedusha is above even that. His kedusha is in its own dimension. It's not just more than any other kedusha. It's in an absolute dimension of its own. It's something which is fundamentally beyond everything else.
Sui generis. Sui generis. It's a Latin word.
Oh.
I mean, it's own category.
Right, it's own category.
Sui generis, S-U-I generis, G-E-N-E-R-R-S. But I think, just to kind of refresh my memory, Kedusha is generally associated with being something separate, right?
Yeah.
So is there any other... So when we're saying kadosh, 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 I know you're alluding to something in the Nevuah of Yeshayahu.
Right.
But, so, when the angels are said to have, in his vision, to say that, means that he is a separate category altogether, that we're not able to understand him.
Right.
The Rambam's idea, which is that we cannot really even know how to speak about him. We speak in negatives.
Right. Yes, exactly. So just to give a mashal for exactly the idea of that the girl is saying, so just a very, you know, kind of mundane mashal, that you could have someone who's fast and you could have someone who's faster, right? And you could have, you know, the person who wins the race is the fastest, and the person who sets the new world record in the Olympics is the fastest ever. But it's always possible. It's always feasible to have someone who's going to be faster than that person. There's always room for greater velocity, for more feet per second. You could always have faster than whatever the fastest was. It's always possible to go faster. They're always setting a new land speed record, and they're always, you know, setting a new you know, record in whatever it is, in the mile run or in the whatever it is. There's always, you know, even the fastest, it's always possible. There's nothing that's a logical impossibility about being faster than that. Then if you would have teleportation, right, which is that, you know, instantaneous going from one place to the other, it's on a scale of its own. It's no longer how fast it was. It's instantaneous. It's moving without, you know, a process of getting from one point to the other. In that kind of way, that, you know, teleportation is not just the fastest way of getting somewhere. It's in a fundamentally different way, a faster way of getting from point A to point B, right? That it's in the same kind of way that Hashem, you know, that you could have holy, holy, or holiest, whatever it is. But there's always possible to, you know, someone else to become, to reach a higher level. There's, you know, an infinite room for growth for people. There's infinite room for more and more kedusha. Hashem's kedusha is off the charts. You know, is a cliche which just means, you know, a lot. It's actually off the charts. That there is no there is no way of measuring it on the same scale of everything else. Mathematically speaking, this past Shabbos, we had a dispute between a 7-year-old and an 8-year-old at the Shabbos table about whether or not infinity is a number. And I was consulted to give the final word in this argument, but I sided with the opinion that infinity is not a number. Infinity, mathematically speaking, is not on the number line. Infinity is not just another number. It's not just, you know, the highest number. Infinity is a concept which is above all other numbers. No matter how high a number is, there's always a higher number. You can always add one. The definition of every number. There's different mathematical rules of, you know, the basic definitions of numbers, but there's the bounded by the rule of addition. You could always add one to a number and get a higher number. There's no such thing as a highest number. Whatever the highest number you could possibly think of, you'll add one to that and get a higher number. Infinity is not a number on the number line. It's not eventually you got high enough and you reach infinity. Infinity is a concept which is off the charts, which means that it's beyond all numbers. It means that there is that it's an impossibly high something which is not just more numbers than anything else, but it's conceptually beyond all other numbers. So the kedusha of a Kadosh Baruch Hu is not just the highest. That would be happenstance. That would be it happens to be higher than everything else. But it you know, it's theoretically possible to imagine something higher if it was on, you know, the scale of measurable, however you measure units of kedusha. If it was just the highest that there was, it might be that, you know, no one will ever reach that. But it's not by definition the highest. The kedusha of a Kadosh Baruch Hu is intrinsically and qualitatively beyond all other kedusha. And as Mr. Rudman said, that this, you know, when we talk about kedusha, we're like talking about Hashem's separateness. And sort of by extension, Hashem's absoluteness. And Rav Yaakov Weinberg explained. Rav Yaakov Weinberg was the Rosh Yeshiva of Ner Yisrael. Spent a lot of time discussing and developing the ideas of the Yud Gimel Ikrim of the 13 principles of faith of the Rambam. And Rav Yaakov Weinberg said that explained that this concept is really the central thrust, is the central idea of the first of the Yud Gimel Ikrim of the 13 principles of faith, that the first principle is in a very simple level is expressed as that Hashem exists. But if you read the text of the Rambam inside, it's much more than that. That the first principle is knowing that Hashem's existence is absolute, not that he is Chalila, just very strong or very powerful Hashem is not just a very powerful being. Hashem is the absolute source of existence. His existence is absolute, and it's fundamentally beyond all other existence. If Hashem was just, for all intents and purposes, a very strong human, but he was limited, so that would mean that it would be relevant to discuss a higher power. It would be relevant to discuss, you know, defeating him, so to speak. That would be relevant to discuss, you know, if it's all on, you know, one comparable chart. So even though it might be, you know, it's silly to talk about, you know, a 3-year-old beating up a 25-year-old. You know, it's just not going to happen. But there's nothing impossible about it. It's just, you know, it's kind of they're just, you know, so far apart. But there's nothing that's illogical about it. It's just, it happens to be that, you know, that's a very unlikely scenario. But there's nothing that's definitionally implausible about that.
So what do we get from trying to describe what is not describable? And to say, all the time, Kiddush, Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. We know we cannot fathom it. What do we get from recognizing it by saying it again and again and again?
Well, is that a different question than anything that we're saying again? Meaning everything that we say, you know, so many times in Tefillah, we say it three times a day. So are you asking a different question than your question more than just why so often?
Not why so often, but why keep saying it?
How is that different than why so?
To use your example, why say it at this time, this time, this time, this time? But why acknowledge it and say it? Why attempt to say the ineffable? Why try to describe?
So you're saying why say it at all? Not why say it so many times. Why say it at all? Okay, so this.
I can see why you can reinforce the majesty, and so when you're appealing to Hashem for mercy, for His support, and so forth, it's important to recognize that you're appealing to that source.
Right.
It's just a frequency that is incomprehensible to me.
Right. So you are asking how often? Why so often? The frequency.
Another time when there's frequency after Yom Kippur ends, when you say, "Is Hashem."
Hashem, who Elohim seven times, right?
Is it similar?
That actually is actually a little bit of the opposite. As some of the commentaries explain that the end of Yom Kippur, Hashem is so close, and kind of like recognizing that Hashem is so to speak retreating, receding back up into from that. You know, that closeness of the Asaras Yemei Tshuva, of that openness, that period of Biyoso Karov. But just in terms of, it happens to be Kedusha, something that we do say every time when we're speaking to Hashem. That's an important part of speaking to Hashem. Every time we are talking to Hashem, that we repeat this understanding, this appreciation that, you know, that we're talking to, that who we're talking about. We spoke a little bit last week about the idea of the... That we spoke about the idea of the Shirei Das that in the Nefesh Chaim really that the understanding that Hashem's existence is absolute and that our existence is not and that Hashem is really the only existence is really something that we can't really operate with. We can't really live with that appreciation. And yet we're still supposed to acknowledge it because in order to really appreciate, you know, how great Hashem is or how absolute Hashem, how necessary Hashem is, that it's something we have to be aware of. It's something that we have to kind of face, even though, as we spoke last week, you know, even the angels, they go up and they come back down because coming too close to that reality would, you know, kind of end your own existence, realizing how absolute Hashem's existence is and how unabsolute and how, so to speak, artificial your own existence is would kind of end your own existence. And we can't live with that. And therefore, there is a going up and then going back down, a kind of recognizing that reality and then retreating from it because Hashem wants us to live in a world in which we do kind of live with our own sense of existence. We talked about that last week. And there is... Even though we can't live with it, there still is an importance of acknowledging and appreciating that is the reality. And you know, I'm still not sure exactly if the question was specifically the frequency, but if we're doing it every time when we come to speak to Hashem, every time that we are now beseeching Hashem, the last step before going into the Bakashos and going into, you know, our reliance on Hashem and all and the talking to Hashem is this last step is acknowledging that Hashem is that Hashem's existence is absolute and is beyond our understanding. The Ran actually in Drashos Aran says, I think we mentioned this before, that the first
it's okay to repeat
the first two steps of Shemona Esrei, the first two brachos, are kind of talking about Hashem's chesed and Hashem's gvura, kind of very even though they're very lofty, but the very relatable way, they're all about Hashem, the way Hashem relates to the world and interacts in the world. An important last step of describing that is specifically to explain, even though we're describing how close Hashem is to the world and how Hashem interacts in the world and how Hashem runs the world, to describe that at the end of the day, Hashem is absolutely beyond and removed from the world in the most absolute sense, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is beyond our understanding, even though we're going through all of how we relate to Hashem and all the way he's given us to understand him. But at the end of the day, Hashem is beyond our understanding, and kind of a fundamental last step before starting the so to speak, main section of Shemoneh Esrei is acknowledging this idea that Hashem is absolutely beyond. To just go a step further, so this idea, check the time here, okay. This idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is more than just, you know, a strong God, he's more than just the strongest deity, he's more than just, you know, very powerful, but that he is it, that he is the entirety, he is the absolute existence. So this is possibly was the focus of the discussion between Moshe and Paro. Moshe came to Paro, when he first comes to Paro in the beginning of Parshas Ve'era, and Moshe comes to Paro and he says that Ko Amar Hashem, that this is what Hashem has said, that Shlach Asami Ve'Avduni, that you have to send my nation, and Paro responds and he says Mi Hashem. He says, who is Hashem? I've never heard of Hashem. I don't know of a Hashem. So then Moshe Rabbeinu repeats himself, but he says it differently. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Elokei ha'ivrim nikra alinu. He says that the Lord of the, or the God of the Hebrews, you know, revealed himself to us, and he said that he needs us to come serve him in the desert. And then Paro responds, and he says, basically, stop causing trouble. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're stopping the people from working, and now you got to go back. And at that point, Paro says, you know, like, Moshe, get out of here. So what exactly was the conversation? What exactly was the back and forth between Moshe and Paro here? Moshe first told Paro that Hashem, Yudkei Vavkei, comes to Paro and he says, there's this Hashem. And Hashem said that we need that you need to send us out. The absolute Hashem, that name of Hashem, describing Hashem, the creator and the ruler of everything, was commanding them, was the one who was telling them that this is my nation. And Paro says, Mi Hashem, I never heard of such a thing. Paro doesn't know of such a thing. Paro is such a concept of one ruler, who's one God, who's in charge of everything, who's absolutely in control, that Paro's unfamiliar with such a concept. Paro knows of different powers. There's the God of the sun, and there's the God of the Nile, and there's the God of this, and there's the God of that. There's a different God for everything. And some gods are stronger than other gods, and there's a whole plethora, a whole pantheon of gods. And that's the world of spirituality that Paro relates to. So Moshe responds to Paro on his own terms, and he says, so our God, Elokei ha'ivrim, the God of the Hebrews, and the name Elokim means power, right? That's the name, the word El means powerful, right? So he says, the power of the Hebrews, the God of the Hebrews has commanded us, and Paro says, oh, so it's your deity versus my deity. It's your God versus my God. So we can play that game. I've got a lot of gods, and you have your God, and we'll see who's stronger. So, you know, if you want to make it a fight between my God and your God, so let's have a battle. And the entire ensuing display of the Makos, of the plagues, if you look carefully at it, you can really see that the goal was to teach Paro that Hashem is much more than just the strongest God. He's more than just the biggest deity in the park. That you find throughout the Makos, where Moshe tells Paro in Shmos Parak Ches, he says, Laman das ki ein Hashem Elokeinu, that I'm doing this in order that you should know that there is no one like Hashem Elokeinu, ba'avur teida ki ein kamoni b'chol ha'aretz, in order that you know that there's no one like me in all of the land. Moshe tells Paro very explicitly that the reason for these Makos are for you to understand that there's no one else like Hashem. This isn't just, you know, your God versus my God. This is something qualitatively and entirely different than the way in which you understand what the concept of God is. And we only have a few minutes left before it stops for Mincha, so you're not going to be able to go all the way through this, but just to see some examples where you see that Paro, throughout the Makos, had an obsession with precision and with control. You find that when Moshe Rabbeinu told Paro that Paro said, make the frogs go away, and Moshe said, okay, when? Paro didn't say immediately. Paro said, oh, I want you to do it tomorrow. Because once Moshe said, it's going to be when you say, it's going to be exactly when you say, this isn't something that, you know, is run its course and now it's over, but it's control here. There's precision. It's going to happen when you say it's going to happen. Paro says, I want to see this. I want it to happen when I say it's going to happen. Find that when Paro was particularly, when Moshe told him that by the Dever, that all of the Egyptian animals are going to die, and none of the Jewish animals are going to die. The Torah says that Paro sent out messengers and sent out scouts through all of Eretz Mitzrayim to check and see if any of the Jewish animals died. It wasn't enough for Paro that all of the Egyptian animals died, or so many of the Egyptian animals died. He needed to see that it was also that none of the Jewish ones died. Because if even one Jewish animal died, so okay, God's very strong, but he's not absolute. And in the when the that that when the emphasized the Paro by Barad, how impressive Barad was, because Barad was fire and ice coming together. These are opposites coming together to do the Ratzon Hashem. Paro doesn't know of such a thing. You've got the god of fire, the god of ice. They're in constant war with each other. There's no such thing as you know, teaming up. And when he shows that no, this is the one God in charge of everything, the opposites can come together because he's in control of everything. And maybe the place you see this in the most dramatic way is that when Moshe comes to Paro and he tells him that there's going to be the Makkah of Makkas Bechoros. So Moshe tells him it's going to be Kachatzos. It's going to be at about midnight. And the Medrash says that when Hashem told Moshe when it was going to be, he said there was going to be Bachatzos. It was going to be at midnight. But when Moshe told Paro, he told him it was going to be at about midnight. Why did Moshe change it? Because what might happen is that the Egyptian astrologers would calculate exactly when Makkas Bechoros happened, and they might be a few moments off, a few seconds off, and it would seem that Makkas Bechoros, according to their calculations, wasn't at exactly midnight. And then they would say, says the Medrash, they would say, Moshe Badaihu, Moshe's, you know, just making things up. So every Egyptian firstborn is going to die. It's going to be 3 seconds off of when he said it's going to be, Moshe, you're such a kidder. That was a good one, right? What in the world is going on? Like, the point is, because if it would have been 3 seconds off, if it would have been very close, it would have shown that God is very strong, but it would not have shown that God is in absolute control. And that was exactly, if as soon as you see that God is not in absolute control, Paro says, okay, your God won this fight, he won this battle, he's very strong, but he's not absolute. That doesn't mean he's indefeatable. He's not absolute. He's not the only possible thing that exists. As much as the only thing that convinces Paro is to see the absolute control, to see that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is in total control. And if it would have been a moment off, then he would have said, okay, Kadosh Baruch Hu is very strong. And that's why when they left Mitzrayim and they saw that Baal Tzifon was still standing, that's what it says, that when they left Mitzrayim, that they turned around and they went, that they camped in front of Baal Tzifon, and the Mitzrayim thought, oh, Baal Tzifon, that even though all of the gods of Egypt were destroyed, but Baal Tzifon is still standing, so maybe we could still fight, because as long as they don't see that, as long as there's some thread, some straw, they can say that, okay, God's very strong, but there's still a fight here, then they're still going to say that we're not giving up yet. It's only, the whole point is that we show that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is absolute, that he's the entirety of creation. It's not just another God. He's the God, and there is nothing else. That was the whole thrust of the Makos, was to get that idea across, because that was what Paro started with, was Mi Hashem, Asher Yishma Bekolo. He says, who's this Hashem guy that I should, there's no such thing as Hashem. I got a Rolodex of gods, and you know, there's one for everything. There's no one God over everything. There's no absolute control. And that was the whole point of the Makos, was to show Paro, no, that you're not talking just about another God, not just the biggest God. This God is beyond. There is nothing else. There's no comparison. There's no competition. There's no, you can't have, you know, a head-to-head and see who's strong. He's not just stronger. He's absolute, and his existence is everything. And that's that is the idea of Kadosh, 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 is saying that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is more than just, you know, happens to be the holiest out of all the different holinesses that exists. His Kedusha is qualitatively beyond anything else that exists, and there can't possibly be anything which is on the same level. It's intrinsically and definitionally beyond everything else. It's the mathematical infinity. It's not just the highest number. It's off the number charts. It's a concept which is that there's nothing beyond that. All right, we'll pause here for this evening.